Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. The topic today is when suffering stops arising. I need to define suffering. Maybe first. Because that's a bold statement. Not all teachers talk about when suffering stops arising. Adi Ashanti has written a book on it. It's called The End of Your World. Eckhart Tolle talks about it. But let's talk about what that is, because I thought that I had ended suffering in 2007, or I didn't, but through the shift to presence, I thought that there wouldn't be any more suffering after that. And there wasn't a lot of emotional suffering after that. A lot of the stories, not all of them, left. Beliefs left. What was really left over, or what remained, was trauma and emotional repression in my body, which had produced all of the visible suffering in my life, now I know. But I didn't understand the role of trauma and repression, obviously, in the overall scheme of things back then. So I don't think I understood how to talk about the end of suffering then. And the end of suffering didn't come. The shift in 2007, which was the shift that began me teaching, for a couple of years, there wasn't anything close to suffering. Maybe even 3 years, from 2007 to 2010, I don't remember any suffering. And let's define it here in a second. But yeah, it just wasn't any. That was right off of the realization. The byproducts were there, which is often true after initial realization, like spiritual experience, you know, where you haven't quite embodied it yet, and anything that's unconscious hasn't come to the surface yet. And you're in the honeymoon period, as someone said. A friend of mine called it. Well, some suffering came. I'm going to talk about that in a second, but let's define it before we talk about when suffering stops arising. For me, and you can define it how you want, but define it in a way that ends suffering is what I would say. Suffering is the carrying over in time, in my view, of something. Why would we have to carry something over in time to survive, we think? So a simple example would be, I have to believe that I'm something. Any identity, pick one. I'm not good enough, or something positive like, I am a good person, I am a Christian. I have to continue to believe that every day. That serves a purpose. If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't know who I am, and I would suffer, so the programming says. So I carry that identity over in time. There are other reasons to carry that identity over in time, actually. There are different reasons, but I'm just giving you like the, you know, the light definition first. I mean, what I'm saying is the real reason we carry things over in time is because of the repression. Emotional repression. We bury emotions so we can't be ourselves. We're forced to identify and carry over in time these false identities that we develop in childhood. That's what we're carrying over in time, is repression. But in a very simple definition of suffering, it's to endure or to carry over in time. I think there's even, look up the root, maybe even the Latin root. I don't know though, because I haven't looked it up. I just know that someone, I've listened to a teacher talk about that. There's a root there in the word to suffer. And I think it's safe to say that it has to do with carrying over in time, because that's carrying over in mind, because time is mind. So if I carry some identity from today until tomorrow, I keep it in my mind. And that protects me from death. Well, you mean not a physical death. The system doesn't know that, though, because it can feel like that when you believe something about yourself. To let go of that would be like, I can't even fathom that would be death. And that's kind of how it is, isn't it? That we carry something over in time because we have to, because we're very afraid of something. Otherwise, we wouldn't carry something over in time. What are we afraid of? I don't think it's not enough to say we're afraid of death in terms of a physical death at some point. I think that's part of it. I mean, for myself, I've looked into this whole question of suffering. It led me to this, is what am I fundamentally afraid of? Which is creating suffering still in my life. And as you guys know, that involved realizing that I was afraid of anger and afraid of being humiliated. So I held that anger back. Anger repression. That's what I was afraid of. So that's what I was carrying over in time more than anything else. And that's what I say. Repression is the root of our suffering. It's the root, I think, of how we carry things over in time. It's the reason for it. Again, because if we have to hold back what's true, we're forced to identify with what's false. And identifying with what's false, you can't even do that without time. Right? Because if a thought comes up and says, I'm an attorney right now, but then it just falls away and I don't carry it over to the next day. I'm not going to go be an attorney the next day. So you have to remember it, believe it, identify with it. But we don't do that. We're not doing that consciously. Identification, that's unconscious. So that's going on with or without our consent or our awareness. We have to believe certain things. To stay safe and get love with each other and survive. But I want to keep this simple because I just think this is about fear. Fundamentally. I mean, look, if you listen to these podcasts, you'll see that I'm simplifying this down, if you'll hear it, to it's the one thing. It's the fear of being yourself, that one network of programs that makes being yourself the core of your resistance. I mean, that being yourself is the thing that you're most scared of. That's what I've been saying. What's scarier, dying 10 years from now, or being yourself right now, walking into the room where your partner is and sharing your true and authentic emotions, or your mom and dad? What is scarier? To me, it's not even a contest. And my body verified this for me. When I was in my head more around it, I didn't get it. But when I went into my body, no. The most terrifying thing is, hands down, expressing anger, or it was, and expressing femininity, because those are my main, and other things that make up my primary repression. Clearly, the biggest fear in my whole life is truly living, not dying. Although death can be scary too. The physical death coming down the road. Because I actually think that truly living is dying right now. And I don't want to make this into a cliche podcast where we say, you've got to live now. You have to die to the ego and live now. But it's true. I mean, but here, where I want to take it in this podcast is, how do you embody that? And how is that connected to the repression that we talk about? This is a beautiful topic to me. I had to do this episode. I felt it in every cell of my being. Because suffering has ended for me. The carrying over, as far as what I'm conscious of, has ended for me. Now, does that mean that tomorrow a disease won't come that's driven by some repression that I didn't know about? I can't predict things like that. I'm just telling you, as I look at my life and have looked at it in the last however long, I don't see carrying over suffering in time. And so that's why I want to do this episode. Stay tuned. It wasn't just a head awakening that I had in 2007. It was also a heart opening. So it was partial embodiment. And so a good deal of my suffering went away, but not all of it. And so those first 3 years of realization, there just was no detectable suffering. It's kind of like how I live now. But I had to embody that realization to live that sustainably. When that realization happened in 2007, that wasn't sustainable because of the repression that I was carrying over in time. And so there was more suffering coming because I was carrying that anger, buried anger in my body. But you can't know that. Unless you do repression work, you can't know that you have repression. Or you can know that it's a major contributing factor to disease and chronic pain and mental health and addiction. You can know the science. But to know it in your direct experience, because it's unconscious, well, just because I woke up to presence didn't mean that that was embodied. So I wasn't aware of carrying that anger and other fear in my body. And here came cancer in 2011, I think it was. Testicular cancer. So that's suffering to me. And so this is where I think I might disagree with some of the teachers on a couple of points. First of all, some teachers don't talk about the end of suffering. And I disagree with them about that because we need to talk about that. And I'll explain that hopefully why. I think I know why some teachers talk about it and some don't. I do hope to get to that topic. But the other thing that I disagree with, maybe with other teachers, is how to define suffering. More specifically, whether to include disease and chronic pain with that. Because I've seen some teachers who talk about the end of suffering, but then they have diseases or chronic pain like I had. And I think, well, that's suffering. Even if you've had a shift to where there's not a ton of emotional suffering around it, and there wasn't with my cancer. I mean, 3 days after my cancer diagnosis, I was giving a meeting and someone walked up to me and said, "You don't even mention the fact that you got diagnosed with cancer 3 days ago." Because I knew how to process at that level. You know, I didn't get to the repression then of anger that probably created the cancer, but the effects of being diagnosed with cancer, yeah, that kind of suffering, that's also dangerous because here the anger repression was creating cancer, and then it's like, oh, we'll just let all the thoughts about dying come and go and everything's okay. But meanwhile, I have this repression that's creating cancer and then later spinal stenosis. So what is suffering if we don't include cancer in that or these other medical conditions? Science says those are emotional issues in many cases. Maybe not all, but in many cases, those are emotional issues coming from repression. Why isn't that suffering then? Even if I'm diagnosed with cancer and I don't have a lot of emotional suffering, I still have just the suffering that a human would have with cancer. I went through, you know, radiation and just all the stuff that comes up, family members, scared. I mean, this is human stuff, you know? And how much do we check out of that, you know? If I checked out of the anger repression that created the cancer, then I wasn't even checked into my experience at all, as far as I'm concerned. If I didn't understand that I had created that unconsciously, then I was unconscious during that period, awake but not conscious throughout the body where the repression was. So I couldn't end suffering. And that's one of my points in this episode. We can't end suffering without embodiment because the body keeps the score. The trauma and repression is held in the body. It's revealed in relationship, and I would add disease and chronic pain and other suffering. So I couldn't end suffering then, And the most that I could do with that cancer diagnosis is feel really at peace with it, frankly. And again, that's kind of dangerous because I actually needed medical care because I had waited so long to get it that if I didn't have my testicle removed, it could have gotten really bad quickly. There is this danger with some spiritual practices that don't get to the root of suffering where you don't know, you're blindsided by the suffering that comes up. It's like shocking. I don't know how many teachers that I've seen just diagnosed with something and then a few of them dead. It's just shocking because you don't have any access to the unconscious, even when you're awake. If you don't, you don't. If you don't know that you're producing chronic pain, for example, you don't know. And I think this is why a lot of teachers don't include chronic pain and disease and suffering, but I don't know how you can't. I mean, I don't know how you don't. Because although I didn't have a lot of emotional suffering, the cancer and the spinal stenosis was driven by emotional suffering. It was driven by, in my cases, and I think that science is right in most cases, by emotional repression. Can we please include all of that in the suffering? And addiction and mental health, all of it. Because if we don't, why are we dividing it up, is my question, when science does not do that anymore? Does not make a division, really. And truthfully, between the mental health, the addiction, and the chronic pain and the physical disease, they're basically saying, although there are different processes involved, our physical system mirrors our emotional system and vice versa. Our immune system and our emotional system are mirrors of each other. So here we are. Suffering is suffering. And I think that's how we're going to end suffering, is by understanding how big it is and that we're creating it all. But again, if we just partition things off and say, this is not suffering. I was just diagnosed with chronic pain. That's a physical thing. That's just because of years of this or that. Maybe not. That could be just an extension of the suffering of your whole life. The same repression. But I didn't know, and we wouldn't know, and none of those teachers would know if any of that is happening unless we have the skills that prompt up that conditioning that tells us that. And that's our work here. Okay, so I couldn't end suffering as a teacher. I wrote 7 books. During that time, I had cancer. I got diagnosed with spinal stenosis. I had a 3-year BDSM sex addiction. I did not end suffering. However, at the surface, it was very peaceful. I have to say that too, because that's how suffering is, you know? So much of it is like covert or hidden or shame-based or, well, covert covers a lot of it, actually. The suffering that was left over for me after the shift was the anger repressor suffering, the silent suffering of the anger repressor, which in some ways can get enmeshed with the awareness teachings and practice and realization. You don't even realize that it's suffering. I mean, cancer, yeah, that's suffering. I knew that. Spinal stenosis, yes, that was nerve pain. That was painful. Addiction, yes. I was enslaved to that. But just being peaceful when my partner's angry, that's not suffering. See how I thought, and I couldn't see a lot of suffering in my life. So in order to end suffering, in order to experience suffering no longer arising, we have to talk about the covert. And that's the only word I can think of right now that covers the things in our life, in our lives, in our relationships that we do, that until they create suffering, we keep doing them because they give us a reward. And it's that payoff or what evolutionary research calls fitness payoffs, that we will keep suffering. We will actually want to continue suffering at the unconscious level because of these payoffs, these utilities, that to which we get something out of it. We're going to keep doing that until the suffering gets bad enough, or we catch on to the fact that even if it's not bad enough, we're creating it, in which case we might wise up and end it, or some other thing happens. And sometimes it's a diagnosis, and we haven't even suffered yet, but the very fear of dying or getting sick is enough to wake us up. That realization is not just about clearing the stories in your mind or having a quiet mind. It's a full shift in experience, a perceptual shift that if embodied can end suffering, and if it's not, suffering will continue. And you can trust that. I've learned to trust that, to trust my body on that question of whether suffering has ended. Okay, so stay tuned. There's more. Anyone with repression, but here I'm going to refer to myself, an anger repressor often has difficulty taking accountability or even knowing how they contribute to suffering in a relationship. So I think that people have to first acknowledge that there's suffering in their relationship or relationships. And then we shouldn't assume that the suffering is created by the other person, because that's how we continue suffering. And that's just not true either. But if we tell ourselves that, we're staying safe from the buried emotions, the emotions that we've buried. We're shadowing out that to the other person, expecting them to change or give us what we need so that the suffering will end. And it's not going to end that way, because there's nobody in the world that can meet all of our needs. Have you noticed that? So we are going to continue suffering as long as we look fundamentally to other people to fulfill those needs. Approval, attention, love, acknowledgement, all the things that we didn't get when we were kids. So this, this goes deep, because now if we're going to end suffering, we have to take responsibility here for, well, we're not responsible for what happened to us when we were kids. I'll be damned. After doing anger repression work, if I'll let anyone help me take responsibility for being chased after school by those kids, being bullied or hit, I'm not taking responsibility for that. Even if I created that, I was 8 years old. And you were young too, and taking responsibility is not that. It's not taking responsibility for the original trauma, and it has nothing to do with moral responsibility. And I think people can stay in their heads with that and say, well, he's talking about moral responsibility, and that's ego. And I'm saying, no, that's not what I'm talking about. Responsibility means that after we were traumatized, now it is only our responsibility, each of us, to make conscious the unconsciousness that now creates the suffering to protect us. That we are now unconsciously creating suffering after the events of childhood or whatever happened to protect ourselves and to get love. And so now we have the responsibility to recognize we're creating it, because we also have the responsibility to end it, because nobody else can do it for us. And that's definitely something that I trust 100%, that nobody can do it for me and nobody did it for me. I had a lot of help along the way by some really good people and a wonderful best friend in Dan McClintock, a co-developer, but I had to end my suffering and he has to end his and you have to end yours. And it's the very lack of taking responsibility that is involved in not ending suffering. Because as long as we believe that we're a victim in some way, like really believe that emotionally, buy into it, we can't end the suffering because we're not taking responsibility for how we're creating it. Now, not what happened in the past. It's not to blame the victim of some original trauma. It's to say that everybody's a victim because we had unconscious parents at the very least, and now all of us have that responsibility. And nobody can really say, well, because my trauma was so bad, I don't have that responsibility. You don't have to do anything, but you will suffer. That's just how the human condition is. You will suffer. And as long as you're okay with that, that's fine. But if you don't want to suffer, we have to keep talking about this. And it includes the needs. That's the point I wanted to make. That to end suffering, this is how I see it now with this work. This will help us to understand that, just to understand it first, and then you'll become conscious of it and you'll see the transformation in your life if you take it all the way. But first understand this, if you can, or try to make these connections, which is that if we use spirituality or anything in it just when we get triggered, for example, they were definitely bypassing there, because that's usually when our needs aren't being met, if you notice. So then that just begs the question, what about all the other time in our lives, or times in our lives, when we're not triggered particularly, but we're in a state of suffering and we're trying to get our needs met? And that's actually our suffering. Now, when we don't get our needs met, which just means like your partner, you know, you want your partner to see you a certain way and they say something and it hits a button for you. You don't get your needs met. I need him to love me. I need her to whatever. And then that doesn't happen. Trigger. Right there, it's a way in. But to see all of our suffering, if we're open. But if we just use it to feel better, then we don't get to the repression that creates that, then we're not going to end the suffering. We're just going to feel better. And we're going to keep suffering. And we're going to keep creating it. But if when we're triggered, this is, I think, the first foray into this work, because we pick up these skills and they work really well on triggers. This is always a potentially a bypass to where you don't end suffering when something works well on triggers. Because I've had inquiries that work well on triggers since 2010, people have said, and I agree, that you can develop inquiry to deal with triggers fairly easy because you focus on identity like non-dual teachers do. And when you do, you avoid the repression that's buried. So you stay safe from that. You stay safe and you rest with an unembodied realization in which you feel better in that experience, safer, but you haven't gotten to the root. That's the non-dual bypass to me. And so, yeah, of course I had inquiries that would make people, after a trigger, recognize presence. Because you can just process certain identities, let those identities, those words, images, feelings, and sensations come and go, do nothing with them, and just be. And there's a natural nervous system regulation there, which the repression likes. You know, it runs things, so it just wants safety. You got that. And then there's the presence itself. And so that fools us into thinking, well, I'm just recognizing maybe and embodying presence. But no, there's a recognition there, but it's being used to avoid the root of suffering. But we may not know that. By just questioning identity, things on the surface, things that arise when repression doesn't arise. So, even though that's our first foray, that we see that even this work, like previous and other inquiries, can help with triggers, we have to go deeper, because the way that we deal with triggers here is it shows us something. It doesn't just show us the peace. It shows us that. It shows us the end of the trigger, but it also shows us that we're creating it and that the trigger is driven by repression. So we learn something or discover something here that I could never have you discover with the old work that I had. You could never have seen this, because like so many teachings and practices, what I was doing with people was a bypass. But now, when you process a trigger, it'll show you something else, which is this is just one aspect of your suffering, and you're creating it all. And you're going to see, too, that the reason you got triggered is because you walked into the relationship or into the room wanting your needs to get met. And the very act of seeking outside of ourselves comes from the repression of emotion, because we hold back that emotion, and in that very instant, we cannot be what we are. We have to be false. There's a sense of deficiency there too, like something is wrong with me. So it's only natural to look outside myself for what seems like it's missing. But what's missing are the buried emotions. And when we bring the buried emotions into awareness through this process, it no longer feels like something is missing. So we don't go looking for our needs to get met in that same way. But until we get to the repression, we'll keep doing it. And we'll learn in this work that every time we're doing it, we're setting ourselves up for suffering. And we're not just going to process the triggers when we don't get our needs met. We start doing inquiry throughout the day to see we're just sitting in our living room running the programming of needing our needs to get met, even when someone's not there. Now, if somebody walks into the room and we don't get our needs met, that same programming creates that trigger. But it's running before the person got in the room or came in the room, because repression just runs. This is a constant mechanism of survival and identification. So once we understand that, we can work with the repression at any time. And then we get to the very act of holding our emotions back and seeking outside ourselves instead of just processing triggers, just feeling better. We get to the root of suffering. And that's how we end it eventually. And I want to talk about that, because the end of suffering is a process. And in my early years of being a teacher, when I was still wet behind the ears, I couldn't say that because I couldn't hold paradox. Non-duality is all paradox. And so to say there's just this now without recognizing there's an unfolding too, see, the mind can't handle that truth until it can. Because the mind, it doesn't like that. It wants one side of that duality. It wants, I'm done. Presence is here. There's no process. Or some people are like, it's all a process. They don't recognize the presence. But it's both. It's presence, this. And then, well, as one of my teachers said, it's also now. Like it extends. It's an unfolding, actually. That's quite beautiful, that you don't want to deny yourself. Yeah, it's now, and it's now, and that doesn't end. And that's not seeking. See, the seeking comes when we're not in the embodiment process. We're not even recognizing awareness yet. So that repression in our bodies is producing the identities. And we think that's what we are, the story. But as we do enough spiritual work and recognition of presence work and this work, we start to see, no, it's presence. That's what we are. Presence is what we are, not the story. The story is created from the repression along with all other suffering. So that's what I didn't understand. So the story can be seen through, and that's what happened in 2007. And that's why I think people think they're done. I don't know. That just makes me laugh because the unconsciousness in that, that just because your story doesn't arise, that's how I lived. You know, that's why I wrote books, because I thought, wow, wouldn't everyone want to have this experience? And I know you would, right? But it wasn't embodied. So it's not enough for you to see that you're not your story. It's not enough for you to see that you're not your mind. And we don't need to do that. Here's why. That's actually hard to do. If you don't go into the body and you sit and try to see that you're the awareness in the midst of all this mind, which is powerfully generated by the repression in the body, that's difficult work that I think requires effort, in my view, because I don't know how to end the suffering that way. And I couldn't. It just didn't work. Just allowing it all didn't end the suffering. So I don't really know anything about ending suffering that way, is what I'm saying. It feels effortful when I think about it. How do you end suffering in a way that I could never end suffering? And how would you do it anyway? Because you're creating it. So even if you're sitting there creating suffering and you're allowing it, that's going to go on because you're creating it. It doesn't matter if you allow it. It's just going to keep being created from the unconscious until you make that conscious. It's what I didn't understand. So the story went away. And so I'm just walking around in the peace that passes all understanding. So I thought. But that peace did not pass the repression test. That was not a peace with anger and the fear of anger. And so the story went away, but the fear of anger was my body. There was no body here. There was just emotional congestion, because there isn't a body here. You'll see it. But that emotional congestion, that repression is so strong that it gives this sense of separation and deficiency to us. And it just stays there until we make the body conscious, until we go all the way with it. And some people might think, well, that's bad news because there's this process now. And I'm like, no, this is good news because now we have so much more wisdom and context and skills for you to just show this to you. It's so beautiful. It's why I do these podcast episodes, guys. It's why I get up every morning at 5 or 6 a.m. and create shorts just so you'll hear this message and you'll understand how really how beautiful this unfolding is. And you'll start that for yourself. I'm going to keep talking about it. But it's a process. And the reason it's a process to end suffering is because we don't want to end it. And if we don't align with that, as I've said in previous podcasts, if we don't align with the fact that our unconscious doesn't want to end the suffering, it's not going to end. If we continue to process identity only, it's not going to end. Because we're creating the identities. So when they come up and we say, oh, that's not me, great. But you created that. So it's like saying, there's going to be more suffering coming. Because all I'm willing to do is that when the suffering comes up, I'm just willing to sit here and let it be until it falls away. I'm not willing to see that I'm creating it. Until you become willing to see that you're creating it, that process will go on. The suffering will go on. Okay, stay tuned. We do a series of somatic tests with people before we start here so that they see what they repress, so they understand what's driving their suffering from the beginning. And we also show them how, to the extent they can see it, they create suffering and why we do it. And here's just a short explanation without taking you through the testing or doing inquiry with you. If you're a human, you have this conditioning, which is you have to stay safe and get love by holding some emotions back because you're afraid to get hurt again, like you've been hurt in the past. That's the human operating system of trauma, essentially. Run on safety. Everything is about managing safety once childhood happens. But it's all happening from an unconscious level. So if I have to hold anger back, as I've said, then I'm forced to identify with something false. There's my suffering. It's already there. As soon as there's repression, there's suffering. Because I can't be myself. I can't, whatever that is, I can't speak up and protect myself if I have buried anger. I can't defend myself. So I'm going to feel powerless and I'm going to suffer in relationship. I can't grieve and feel sadness if somebody dies or if there's a breakup. So it's hard to move on and grow with that. It's hard if you can't feel hurt in a relationship and process it. How do you move beyond it? So emotional repression, as soon as that's happening when we're kids, we're suffering. We're ready for a life of suffering because we can't be ourselves. Here come the deficiency stories. Early in life, they're felt more than thought. If you'll remember, we just have always felt like there's something wrong with us. Something is missing. Not good enough. Unlovable. That's the repression. That sense of deficiency, as I've said, is emotional deficiency. So we're deficient in those emotions that we've buried. So as soon as we have repression, we have this sense of deficiency. We have these identities. We also have to have shadows to protect ourselves, right? So we have to believe that there are big bad wolves in the world so that we will not get to the big bad wolf in our bodies. And we create all this for safety and to get love, for survival, and we keep doing it, and that's the human operating system until it's made conscious that runs things. So that's going to run a spiritual path as soon as you get here. It's going to keep running that and keep creating suffering until it's made conscious on the path. Nobody spoke that directly to me. They just talked about ego and separation and awareness, and I bypassed the shit out of the unconscious. Now you don't have to if you take the test and you do this work. I mean, you know, what do you do? Regrets? No, that I have none. That's part of ending suffering. I have none. Could I have done all this differently? Oh, fuck yes. I could have done everything differently. I could have had this work that we have now back in 2004 when I first came to awakening, and I would have gotten to the root of suffering. And I don't know if I could have avoided those diseases and had a different life. But man, I would have liked to have tried. But I don't have any regrets about that because that would just keep me safe. All that stuff at the surface, the suffering, is just there to keep us safe. So regret got processed along the way. But I'll tell you that since, even though I don't regret it, I have this opportunity to say to you, since I'm a teacher and some people come here, that you don't have to do what I did now because we have this work. I want to seriously talk to you guys about ending suffering, but it's a process. And what makes it a process is that we want to stay safe and get love above all else. At the unconscious level. So when we say things at the surface, when you say things like, how long will it take, or when will I be enlightened, or I'm seeking this or that, no. At the unconscious level, all you want is to hold the emotion back, the emotions back, and stay safe from getting hurt again and feeling and expressing those emotions and getting love and approval. And other needs met because of the repression. And I'm telling you, the quicker that you align with that in your mind first, and then in your experience, the faster you'll end suffering. And it's not a race. But once you see you're creating it, well, it's not a race, but think about that for a moment. If I'm sitting here creating my own suffering and I want to know how long it will take to end it, I've got to do some things. Because if I sit here in my unconsciousness is just generating suffering and time. especially just resting as awareness and not getting to the root of the repression that's creating the suffering in time. If I'm just sitting here being with my suffering, I can't expect that to end, really. Even if the mind gets quiet. Because again, we teachers have shown you, we'll get diseases, chronic pain, even when the mind goes quiet. Suffering doesn't end. I have to go deeper than that. It's body and it's repression. And trauma. And that's how we end suffering. By aligning ourselves with the fact that we don't want to end it. And by making the programming that demands that we suffer conscious. And that's it. It's not. I'm not trying to oversimplify that. But that is what it is. If you're interested in this work, that's what our path is. And in terms of how long that takes, since we're talking about when suffering stops, we're pointing to something that happens, right? You could say it's a point in time, but time is mind. But in our experience, we wake up one day or gradually we notice that, oh, with this work, I mean, the deficiency stories are not here. Or my partner just said something and I didn't get upset about that. And yet I'm connected to my body. So I'm not checking out. In other words, I'm here. I'm present. Or, wow, my chronic pain is a lot better since I've been doing this work. My depression isn't really there anymore. And I just started the work a few weeks ago. Why is it important to see those things? Is that just us looking for results or outcomes? No, it's not. That's limited thinking. And let me explain. The inside and the outside are one. So if you start making the unconscious conscious within your body, the inside, you should be seeing changes on the outside. And if you're not doing skillful work. So we don't want to be attached to the outcomes. But if we're not seeing those outcomes, we're not getting to the root of suffering. We're not going to end it. It's not going to end all at once for most people. Ask any teacher who's taught for more than 10 years and they'll tell you that for most people are not going to just wake up and be free of suffering from there on out. Because the operating system in our bodies demands that we stay safe and get love until it's made conscious. This is why I think us teachers get sick, because we think we've ended suffering and we start teaching, but then there's the diagnosis. I mean, I've seen it all with us teachers, mental health issues, addictions, chronic pain, disease, the classic suffering of emotional repression, really. So it's a process, and it's a process even for us teachers, but only some of us are open to, I think, really ending it. And only certain teachers talk about suffering no longer arising. And Eckhart Tolle is one of them. And I actually really like Eckhart. As much as I criticize my own older teachings and others, I criticize his because I don't think he provides a pathway at all to making the repression that creates the pain body that he talks about conscious. But in his being and in his teaching, his words, I feel it. He's experiencing it. He's experienced suffering ended. I know that. And when you listen to other teachers, you can tell if they haven't. Well, that's good. They're being honest, because no teacher should talk about it if they're still suffering. And I was still suffering up until the time that I found this work because of the repression. So when so my experience, I can trust it. And when I look out, this is why I criticize other teachings, because I can tell that there's still repression in them, because it's a shadow. It's a mirror. When you do your own work, you see things. But in the same way, that's why I recognize Eckhart and other teachers, like the wisdom of Ken Wilber, for example. I mean, Those people I very much respect. And Eckhart, I respect him because he talks about, among other things, when suffering stops. And he also talks about the three levels or frequencies of being, which is in the last part of A New Earth. And it is, there's no words for that for me, because I personally haven't heard another teacher write like that about something that is truly experiential. And he just nailed it. In my view, he did. When he talks about acceptance, inspiration, and then enthusiasm as being different levels or frequencies of being, depending on the level of embodiment. Thank God for that, because the first frequency that he talks about is acceptance. And that's where I think a lot of the bypass is that we recognize the presence and we start just noticing things are coming and going. So then we're just watching our suffering come and go, but there's an acceptance of it. And when something comes up, we just let it be. It's allowed. It dissolves. There's that first frequency of being. It's not embodied. Some people stop there because they're afraid of what they've buried. And that's what I call the bypass. But if you don't stop there because of the need for safety and you continue processing, you embody that sense of being. And then there's this, what he calls inspiration, which is still not fully embodied. And you can use different words to describe the process. This is just what he chose. But inspiration, to be in spirit. And then there's the third one, which is enthusiasm. And that, to me, is embodiment. And I think he even says that. It's in God, but it's not religious. It's just present embodied. I needed to hear that early on the path because there was such a bypass coming for me. And thank God that he wrote about that so I could come back to that and go, hold on a second. This acceptance that I'm experiencing from the recognition of presence is not the end. This is not, I'm not done here. And all I needed to do was look at the suffering because the inside and outside are one. So there was my chronic pain inside. And there was the cancer, the repression, I should say. And then, so the repression, I should say, was on the inside, anger repression. And on the outside, cancer, chronic pain, relational issues. So the evidence was there, but I was blind to it. And I don't want you to be anymore. That's why I'm bringing it up. So just look for suffering in your life, because that's one of the greatest indicators that you haven't ended it. It sounds almost like, I don't know, flippant to say that, but I don't mean that at all. I mean, I needed to pay attention to that suffering, and I wasn't. I wasn't including my chronic pain in my emotional suffering. But it was driven by anger repression. So I couldn't end suffering. A big part of the bamboozle is just the mind that comes up and decides that we're done, or decides that this cancer diagnosis or these ulcers have nothing to do with the trauma of my childhood or the pain that I still haven't gotten to. Even though I'm saying I recognize presence or I meditate every day or whatever. There's a deeper embodiment that can happen more quickly if we change the context here. And I want to bring Eckhart into KI. As much as I criticize, I actually feel very inclusive for teachers that I align with, like Ken Wilber. So this part of Eckhart's teaching, I want to bring it right in because I can't say it any better than he does at the end of A New Earth. These frequencies of being matter because suffering will be there with each of those frequencies until it's fully embodied. He didn't say that, but I've now lived it, and I can tell you that that's what happened for me. That if I were to have trusted my body more, it would have told me everything. As long as I had that contraction and then chronic pain, there was cancer, there was spinal stenosis, and then let's get back to the covert relational issues. Because ending suffering, it's one thing to see like overt triggers go away, Because often that's what we deal with in spirituality, right? If I'm visibly upset, just rest, let it be. See that I'm not that. Whatever. But what about this stuff where we're creating suffering, but from stealth mode, where we don't realize we're doing it so that we can keep creating it in our relationships? This is how I had to go bigger with the whole question of what is suffering before I'm going to end it. Because I had to bring repression inquiry to these areas of my life that I was still unconscious around. And frankly, the spiritual thing became a source of suffering, or became a way that the repression began or continued to express itself through me, but feel justified. And I even rationalized it. For example, as I said, Chester's angry, but I'm just sitting here in presence. Or I'm quiet, or I'm walking away, but I'm certainly not getting angry. So therefore, I couldn't have embodiment because I wasn't willing to go to a part of myself. I was creating more suffering by using spirituality and presence to sort of justify the fact that, well, look, I'm not angry, he is. So I created more suffering for myself. And then by, for example, not setting boundaries from anger repression, not saying, I don't want this or this. See, because I came through spirituality and they said you shouldn't have to want or anything or no judgments or anything. And I was living, that's not healthy. That's really not healthy. Like, it's actually unhealthy to not have boundaries. You can get disease from it. That's what science is saying. Anger repression can lead to disease, which quite frankly means in my relationship, when I couldn't set boundaries, I was storing anger in my spine and making myself sick. And that was really covert, because when you just go along with a lot, it looks like presence, acceptance. See, it's that frequency of being. It's like, oh, so you're going to walk all over me? That's fine. I don't really suffer letting it all be. When I needed to get raging mad, because that was what was happening at the unconscious level anyway. I needed to include that, not to become an angry person, but to embody presence. And I didn't become an angry person. When we have anger repression, we're angry people, but or sadness repression, we're sad. But you do this work, you clear that out. So the other covert stuff would be things that would get cleared out that you may not recognize first as being repression. So boundaries, obviously, not saying no. Just triggers, you know. Sometimes we're reacting to other people's unconsciousness. When we've done a lot of spiritual work, we're around people who are acting a certain way or doing something, and we're bothered by it. Maybe even don't want to be around it. But we may not look the extent to which our problem with that has really nothing to do with them. It has to do with something that's unprocessed for us in many cases. How many empaths came into spirituality like me and justified how they disconnected from a lot of different people and groups because they thought, well, their energy is something. But no, what if it was our energy that we buried? For a lot of us, that's what made us do that. That's what I mean by covert. Because see, I suffered in very quiet ways. Like, I'm the guy who's going to leave the group and just go home. And you think, well, that's just me setting a boundary or taking care of myself. Yeah, no. That was me disconnecting because I was disconnected from my body. So that was very covert, though, because I would say to people, like I've said before, well, I just have to go, you know, or my back's hurting. Never mind that the anger repression that made me want to disconnect was making my pain hurt. But you see, I didn't know that. So I was just operating in that stealth mode. creating more suffering for myself, not realizing I was generating it. In very covert ways. Being a teacher and never really mentioning anger that much, other than if it comes up, let it be. Anger repressors cannot let anger be because it doesn't come up. It just creates the suffering that does come up. I would talk about sadness. I would talk about hurt. And that's why you don't often hear me talking about it as much now, because it was anger that was buried for me. But if hurt or sadness is buried for you, that's where you need to focus, of course. I try to stick to my experience. I just want to see if there's anything else on the covert thing, because I really did want to like paint the picture for you so that you could look at your own life and don't have a narrow, first of all, define suffering for yourself, but don't also have a narrow view of that. It's really all-encompassing, and that's how we're going to end it, by becoming conscious of how it's everywhere in your life. That may seem daunting, but it's true if you look. Here's what I mean by that. If you can't just be comfortable being yourself in every moment, just being yourself, then there's going to be suffering of some kind. Being, to embody being, and to be, and to truly allow everything is really the only way that suffering ended for me. So I had to do this work and actually go proactively into anger in order to end suffering. It's a very different approach. And that's why I never ended suffering, because I wouldn't go to the one place that I needed to go, the one thing to end it. So I just started going there relentlessly. And when I did, I also visited fear, which is the real universal primary, the fear of that anger and the fear of being humiliated if I express the anger and all of that. And that's what you have to do. You know, maybe yours is sadness or hurt. It's just go there proactively to end suffering. But it's not effortful in the way that you might think. It's not about trying to get rid of the suffering that's arising. It's not about trying to take things away. It's about adding things into awareness. So my partner would leave the bread out. Well, we just bought that bread. We don't have tons of money. So instead of saying something to my partner in my days of anger repression, I might process the trigger, right? Because I don't want to go into the anger proactively. As an anger repressor, I would never have done that. As a sadness repressor, that's not where you're going to go when you're triggered, right? So when the trigger came up, that's the visible suffering. And that's the thoughts like, he doesn't respect me, or he left the bread out. You know, this is my first marriage, mostly dealing at that level. And then just storing the anger. That's how I used to process things. It's just the contraction remained contracted. The visible suffering came up, like stories, feelings that were safer. Let those be. Process those. The anger remains buried. Feel better temporarily. But with this work, it became proactive, meaning, okay, now the bread is left out. The way that I could process now was go straight into making the anger conscious immediately. And there's no trigger, because the trigger was created by, as science says, our suffering is created by the emotional repression. So it was the holding of anger back with the goddamn bread that made me suffer. And me trying to process the trigger that came up from the buried anger was me trying to stay safe and get love. Still, I was adding suffering in to my life more, or at least prolonging it by doing what a lot of non-dual teachers tell you to do. Rest, let things be. And I did, and I rested and let the goddamn bread be for years. And I stored the goddamn anger for the bread, the proverbial bread, in my spine, because I don't have a problem with the bread being left out, really. This is just an example of, I had lots of different issues, but it wasn't really bread. Maybe once or twice, but it makes the point, hopefully, that I became more proactive. And I mean, I did actually do it one day on the bread. This was with Chester, because I remember thinking, oh, I've been here before. And he left the bread out. I just went into, I'm angry, unconsciously. There was just no trigger. And then from that, I learned that I could feel and express things to people. Without the trigger there to keep me safe, I could say, hey, babe, don't we think we should put the bread up? See, I never wanted to say that because it could create conflict. So just process the trigger. Now it's proactively go to the repression that's buried, which means you're adding something into awareness. You're adding into awareness what you bury. And by making that unconscious conscious, the suffering, the trigger goes away. So then suffering becomes optional in any moment that you notice that you're suffering here. And I mean that. The only reason that the suffering continues is if you don't go to our repression inquiry. And that just means that your system wants to suffer. It's staying safe and getting love in whatever suffering remains for you. And so it's really just up to you entirely once you learn the skills to end the suffering. And this is why it's about taking responsibility and leaving the teachers behind and the therapists behind, eventually leaving us behind, because you're going to have the skills to get to the root of suffering now. You'll come back here for mentorship and for skills, but only until you get it. And then once you've got it, that's it. And then it's all up to you. So let me just spend these last minutes talking about the most important thing here on this particular episode, which is how we prolong the suffering and therefore the path here by not taking responsibility for our suffering and the fact that we're creating it. Now, we can't. We cannot be conscious in direct experience of how we're creating it until we start to do repression work, because that's how we're creating it. As long as that repression remains unconscious, we can only know that information in the mind. And it's important to know it in the mind, but once we take it into practice, then we know it in the body and in experience. We're actually seeing the programming that demands the suffering at some point here, that creates it. It may take a while because we don't want to see that, you see? So you might say, well, why does the method not show it to me? Because you don't want to see it yet, which probably means that there's suffering going on in your life, but you're not bringing the inquiry to it because you're staying safe and getting love from that suffering. See how it's your responsibility. You don't want to give that power away to anyone, because then you can't end the suffering. So your job is to see the ways in which you're creating suffering. So people come to me. It's such a great thing that I get to do for people, is to give them their power back. That's why I call myself a mentor now more than a teacher. Because I want to show you how to take responsibility in the suffering for yourself. That's my only job. So when you come here, people come here and they say, how long will it take? I'll say, you're creating the suffering. How long will it take for you to process that suffering that you're creating when you go back to your spouse? That's how long it will take. Because in every moment that there is suffering, the suffering in that moment is optional, actually, because the work brings relief from the suffering if you're skillful, but also it gets to the root of it so that you're ending suffering overall. So why wouldn't you just go process with your spouse? See that? Unless the unconscious, I want to stay safe and get love conditioning is running things. See that? There's your bypass. When you look to other people and don't take responsibility for how you're generating it, or you don't know how and you don't reach out to learn how, then you're creating more suffering, more time, more triggers. Or you're just not doing anything that would end that. Other than, well, you're not doing anything to end it, period. You might be getting moments of reprieve, but that doesn't end the suffering. It's really tricky because the suffering can quiet from moments of reprieve over time. In other words, the mind can get quiet. That's really deceptive because the body keeps the score. So you can have a quiet mind and contraction in the body, still a sense of deficiency or separation in the body. And that tells you everything, actually. Even if your mind is quiet, that more suffering is coming, most likely. See, this is about trusting yourself. So from awareness, can you trust that your experience is going to tell you everything that you need to know to be free? Are you ready to learn the skills to learn it? But it's going to tell you everything that you need to know. I'm not. I'm going to show you the skills. The skills are going to show you, and your own consciousness is going to show you everything. Meaning that when an identity comes up, you're going to learn from this work that you're creating that to stay safe and get love. You're going to learn that you're the only one that can process the repression that creates it, because you're the only one that can see yourself doing it, because it's that unconscious. And when you have chronic pain, you're going to see, because no one else can, with these skills, that you're generating it in each moment to stay safe and buried hurt or sadness or anger, fear, and you're the only one that can see that. Because it's unconscious in you. How could anyone point to that for you? You see how we give our power away and we don't trust ourselves, and then we don't take responsibility and we don't end the suffering. Okay, that feels like it's about it for me. It doesn't feel like there's anything else to say. I hope that I've motivated you, because this feels really good for me. Like, this whole topic is, I mean, guys, even though there's a lot of suffering in our lives, if there's earnestness in your life, there's a lot of freedom for you. Like, there's a lot of freedom, energetic freedom, actually. I want you to understand that too. That this is something that you're going to feel. It's like Eckhart says, it's an embodiment process. Acceptance, don't set the bar so low. Don't set the bar this low to talk about just recognizing presence as if that's the end, because that's the beginning. That's setting the bar really low, or as low as you could set it in realization. Just recognizing the basic presence. But to go deeper, as Eckhart is talking about, and as these skills will show you, that's what you're here for. But when you're unconscious, you won't give that to yourself, that freedom. See, don't forget why you came here. Even though you have this conditioning to suffer, there's an aspect of you, call it awareness, higher mind, whatever, that knows that all this suffering is not you or is not necessary. That's what I'm trying to appeal to here, is that within you that knows. And that's the good news. To who you really are, I want to say to you that suffering can end. I can't talk to the conditioning that you think you are, because that suffering won't end that way. I want to talk to who you are, which, and I know you know what that means, even if you're still suffering. And who or what you really are, that doesn't need to land anywhere. What you really are, your authentic self, which is not a belief or a story, but what you really are, it doesn't need to land anywhere. What needs to land and stay safe is the conditioning of repression. So every time you land somewhere on the path and you rob yourself of freedom, remember that you're doing it for safety, even if you're not conscious of it. And remember that you are setting the bar so low. Remember that you're doing that to yourself, is all I want to say. There's no one else that can, you can't blame anyone else. I hate to say it, but I have to say it. If you're still suffering, you can't blame anyone. That's the victim consciousness. If you continue to blame others, focus on others, you're not going to end suffering. Because all of that is created from the inside. I hope this helps. In other words, I wanted to speak to what you really are, to light a fire in you, if it's not already lit, for the end of suffering, for experiencing when suffering stops arising. It's not a carrot in the future. It's an invitation to see in each moment how you're creating it from the unconscious. Thank you for listening. And as always, if you want to start the path, you can always go to killaby.com, scroll to the bottom of the page. There's a free repression test, and that's part of the somatic testing that I invite everyone to do when they start the path. And then I'm going to put a link to the repression test in the description of this episode. And also, since this episode is coming out right before our retreat, we're doing a 3-day retreat in May, the first time ever that we're doing this work publicly with people. So if you've been listening and you haven't started the work, this is a really good chance to start. And the workshop days are spaced apart so that you have plenty of time to practice what we show you in between. So that link will be there also. Thank you for listening.